Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being here with us this afternoon. President Trump, who are we talking to just recently this week? I was like, you know, that census thing. President Trump has said something about the census. Is it possible that we redo another one to try to make things more fair? Today, President Trump puts out this on True Social. I've instructed our Department of Commerce to immediately begin work on a new and highly accurate census based on modern day facts and figures, and importantly, using the results and information gained from the presidential election of 2024. People who are in our country illegally, all capital letters, will not be counted in the census. Ryan, do you know how he ends his True Social posts these days?
Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Bingo. You have my attention, Mr. President. My question originally was, is this even workable? Who were we talking to about this? Who said, I'm not sure that this is possible. But the idea that we would recount and reallocate representation in our American government, that's the YouTube live chat poll for today. And I really would love to know what you think about it. Should President Trump redo the sentence? You've got three options. Yes, to count only citizens. Yes, to count all with legal status. And no. Now, the one that's in the middle there, to count those who have legal status here, there are people who are here on legal status, paying into the system, paying taxes. You don't have to be a citizen to pay taxes. That's certainly the case. But it's kind of a wrinkle that I think we should be thinking about. Should only citizens be represented in the United States government? Those are your three options. The follow-up question that I'd love to get your comments on the Annie Fry YouTube channel is this even possible? I'm going to ask Hans about it, because Hans is going to understand the mechanisms behind the putting that into place. But Donald Trump here has already said he's instructed our Department of Commerce to immediately begin work. So it seems to me like the president wouldn't put that out there if he didn't think it was doable.
You know, it's interesting to me about this topic is, first of all, I thought this was not going to happen. So the fact that he's tweeting about it and truthing about it is a little bit of a surprise to me. So good call, Annie. But second, if he does this in 2026, would they have to do it again in 2030? Or would they just have to do it again in 2036? Because it just has to happen every 10 years, as far as I understand.
Well, I would think that I think the schedule would still stay on par. I still think you'd do it in 30.
Seems like it would be up to the next administration.
The census in the 2020 that got punted to 2021, I guess it was, because of COVID, that was rife with problems.
Yes, major, major problems.
Big, big problems. I almost feel like it would be possible to justify the redo of this one as an anomaly based on all of the concerns that we had with the one that was just done. And also, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm going to ask Hans about this in about 10 minutes from now. But Illinois, obviously gerrymandered. Stephen Colbert has J.B. Pritzker on. We played that clip for you yesterday. You've probably seen it by now. Stephen Colbert, trying to really prove the detractors wrong that he's for everybody, invites J.B. Pritzker to be on a show earlier this week. And he's like, hey, you got those Texas Democrats up in your state. I'm going to show you a map of Illinois. And then he tells J.B. Pritzker, this is a gerrymandered map. And J.B. Pritzker's response is, we had kindergartners draw it. That, you can't even make that up. He thinks it's funny. Then J.B. Pritzker responds, the problem with what Texas is doing is they're gerrymandering in the middle of the decade. They don't gerrymander like we do, which is on time. And if you've got a bull crap census that you're basing your gerrymandering on, then maybe that's the... I honestly don't think that Donald Trump is like searching for a valid reason. I think he's way far past that. But I don't think that you have to change the whole future of it. Or possibly with technology, I would think that you could do a census more often than every 10 years. When this has been established in the past, a census is a gigantic undertaking. If we are now in 2025, I think that technology has probably advanced in the last 5 years enough to validate we do a census more often. Maybe it's every 5 years.
Well, regardless, you're right about the 2020 census, which didn't even happen on time because it was so rife with problems. And it's not just, you know, conservative radio world saying it was problematic. The Census Bureau says it was problematic. The Census Bureau itself under Biden said that they screwed up like 8 to 9 states. So that is enough right there justification to say we have to redo the census. This should have been talked about as like a campaign promise. It was so bad.
One of the things that I have repeatedly said Stephen Miller, advisor to President Trump, needs to do when he gets done with government is open a Cameo to win fights within your marriage. Like, you've got little petty fights. It doesn't matter what it is. Stephen Miller, whatever you want. As long as you could pay the man, I think Stephen Miller could win the fights about the socks that your spouse is constantly laying on the floor. I think he could make an argument, make a case, and help you win that argument. Here's where he's talking in context of the Texas redistricting and the gerrymandering issue.
Chicago, New York, Massachusetts. Democrats have gerrymandered the vote beyond recognition to try to maintain their advantage in the House elections. On top of that, let's not forget, Democrats rigged the 2020 census by including illegal aliens. Remember, they sued Donald Trump, they sued the administration, they fought tooth and nail to include illegal aliens in the census. 20 to 30 of House Democrat seats wouldn't exist but for illegal aliens. Texas is taking just a small corrective step against this ocean of fraud, this ocean of abuse by the corrupt Democrat Party, Sean.
So he's saying 20 to 30 seats wouldn't exist in the House if it weren't for the counting of the illegal aliens. I guess that's really what they are, that are in our country. There are reports right now, the number I continue to see is 42. If you redid the census and districted based on a new fair census that counted citizens, or the other alternative for yes, we should redo the census in our YouTube poll today is yes, to count anybody who has legal status, which would obviously include citizens, but not the illegal aliens, not just doing a head count, that there are 42 seats on the line. And I've also seen a lot of pundits out there talking about how if you look at the states where Democrats could effectively gerrymander, they've really almost maxed themselves out. They're running out of territory. They've done this. They've taken this ball almost as far down the field as they possibly can. And the Republicans, they are not completely innocent, across the entire 50 states and trying to draw beneficial districts. But the Democrats, the percentage, the opportunity that they have to effectively use this to retain power, they've squeezed the rag near dry. And if the Republicans were to step up to the plate and swing with the same fervor that the Democrats have done on this particular issue, they're done.
Yeah, looking at you, Missouri. Also, Illinois, by the way, that stupid clip of Pritzker on Colbert, you know, you already referenced it, but one of the things that he's saying when you just stop and take a step back from the joke, which didn't land, about, kindergartners wrote it, and then we move on, like no address of the actual issue. What he's saying is, you're doing it mid-decade. That's you shouldn't do that. A.K.A., we did it first. Mm-hmm. I mean, lost in this discussion is him openly saying, we did this first. And so you can't catch up now. That's not fair to us.
Don't take away our advantage here. We did this. It's so funny to me that that's what Democrats do. It's their retort. Their biggest problem with this is you are cheating the way we cheated, and we don't like it. So stop it. That's our advantage.
I'll be interested to see what Hans has to say about this. And I could pretty much do the entire rest of the show talking to Hans about all the issues that are fluttering about right now. I've been talking. I started the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 in June of 2016 for 2 hours on Saturdays, 5 to 7 p.m. And Hans von Spakovsky was one of the guests that would come on my show on Saturday between 5 and 7 p.m. Like, that's a special kind of person.
Yeah.
It is not easy to get guests, especially a lot of times that you can work with people and they'll record something during business hours. Hans would come on and talk to me about whatever was going on, but a lot of what was taking place was Russia collusion. June of 2016, my relationship with Hans von Spakovsky was accompanied by Russia collusion the entire time.
Born in strife.
And he has been spot on with his assessments of what's happening. He's been asking the right questions. And to think that we are near 10 years, over 9 years, into this storyline, and to think in June of 2016, July, August, whenever we were having these conversations to begin with, to think about having those conversations with him at the beginning, if the consequences, if the grave consequence of that storyline would have had the weight that it was supposed to, we would not be talking about Donald Trump today in 2025 at all. Hillary Clinton would have won. Lord knows where we would be right now. Donald Trump did the unthinkable, won that election in 2016, and this story has lingered for 10 years. There are people, I don't know if I see him. Maybe we see him in our YouTube chat still, but there are still people who are absolutely convinced that Donald Trump was in bed with Russia trying to scoop the election from the American people. Completely blind to the fact. Completely blind to the fact that Donald Trump's opposition, who manifested this story to try to keep him from winning an election, was trying to steal an election from the American people. That's what they were doing. They just flipped the script and accused the other guy for it. Hans von Spakovsky on the Annie Fry Show next. We're going to get to the census. We're going to get to Russiagate and anything else we can fit in about 10, 12 minutes. And we need your thoughts on the YouTube live chat poll. Should President Trump redo the sentence? He has said today on Truth Social he's directed the Department of Commerce to get to it. Let's be right back. Don't go away.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Is it helps decide congressional maps.
Right.
Does this have everything to do with redistricting?
Well, it does. In fact, we know the 2020 census, the errors were almost always to the detriment of red states. Blue states like Rhode Island.
Do we know that?
We do know that. The Census Bureau's own audit of its work has proven that. Blue states like Rhode Island were overcounted. Rhode Island then didn't lose a seat. Red states like Alabama were undercounted. Listen, this is just a fact. It wasn't all red-blue, but it was disproportionately red-blue.
We the people of the United States.
Perfect union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Hans, I am so excited to talk to you today. I could talk to you all day about the billions of things going on right now, specifically with the Justice Department. But I wanted to start with the census and ask you if you had seen President Trump's True Social post that was put out directing the Department of Commerce to get to it and redo the census.
I did see that, and I actually have to tell you, I think that's a good idea. And you just played a clip that is one of the reasons why it's a good idea, because in 2022, the U.S. Census Bureau put out a report admitting that it had made a huge set of errors in the 2020 census. It had overcounted and undercounted 14 states. Almost all the states that were overcounted, I think with one exception, were blue states. All the states that were undercounted, with one exception, were red states. And listen, the errors the errors were so big, Annie, that when, remember, they always use the population to do apportionment, right? The
sure.
Census Bureau says, based on population now, here's how many members of the U.S. House you as a state have. Those errors were so big that Texas got cheated out of an extra House seat it should have had. Florida was cheated out of two seats that it should have gotten.
Man, Hans von Spakovsky with us right now with the Heritage Foundation. So would you say that President Trump's direction in this regard to redo the census, it's more of a correction than it is like a new installment in how we do censuses? It's basically saying the last one we did was incorrect, needs to be redone, so we should engage in that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that is correct. Plus, everyone should remember that we are one of the most mobile societies of any of the Western democracies. People move a lot. Texas, where, you know, there's a huge fight going on over redistricting right now, I think last year they had the highest growth rate in their population of any state in the U.S. So many people have been moving to Texas that in the last 5 years since that census, they've added over 2 million residents to the state. And, of course, 2020 census didn't take that into account.
What is the undertaking for something like what President Trump is directing? Is it actually feasibly actionable that this could be done in what amount of time?
Well, there's no way it could be done this year. I do think they could get it done next year. If they right now took the census form, figured out what questions should be on it, and immediately sent it off to the printers to start printing them, and if they got out of mothballs the blueprint, the plan that they have in place for doing a nationwide census and started putting that in place, hiring people, I think they could get it done by next year. This is all made easier by one very big fact that people need to realize. The days of census workers going to every single household and the Census Bureau having to mail a form to every single household in the U.S. are long gone. In the last census in 2020, I think it was over 60% of American households filled out the census form online. And that makes conducting a nationwide census easier and faster. It's still a big undertaking, and it would take a lot of work and a lot of organization, but I actually think it could get done next year.
Hans, if it gets done in 2025 or if it gets done in 2026 before November, when would the new maps be drawn and when would they take effect?
Well, if Census could get all of this done and the data out to the states by December of next year, then the legislatures, as you know, most states, their legislatures are part-time. They only come into session in the first quarter of the year. If they could get this done by December of 26, then in the first quarter of 2027, the states could get to have the data. They could do redistricting. And so the data would be ready for the 2028 election.
And just as I'm just kind of thinking about this as I'm listening to you, a lot of people think about the congressional seats and, how they are divvied up to make sure that they are representing an equal amount of people, specifically in the House of Representatives across the country. Does that also affect the electoral votes that each state would have?
Not unless Congress changed federal law to change the apportionment formula and to say apportionment will be redone. So Congress would have to act to do that. But states who want to use the new population data for redistricting, for actually, drawing the political boundary lines of their existing congressional seats and state legislative seats, they could do that immediately. They don't have to get permission from Congress for that.
Hans, you're just a wealth of information. I love that I can ask these questions and pinpoint. I bet if you're at a trivia night and they're like, this category is census. You're like, yes, pass me the answer sheet. Hans von Spakovsky with us right now. I want to shift a little bit into, was talking about this in our first segment before we brought you on, how you've been coming on my show since I was doing Saturdays, I think in 2016. And we've been talking about Russia the entire time. We now have a Justice Department that is throwing big names out there. We've got Tulsi Gabbard throwing big names out there. And then also hand in hand, we've got James Comer of the Oversight Committee subpoenaing the likes of up to Bill and Hillary Clinton to come in to answer, do depositions there. What do you make of this moment in time right now as far as the exposure of the deep state and how this Trump administration is handling it?
All I can say is thank goodness that finally, people are acting to try to investigate all of the wrongdoing we know about and all the potential wrongdoing that particularly went on during the Biden administration. I will tell folks that even if none of this results in criminal prosecutions, and look, you know, Pam Bondi has said she's got a strike force investigating it. There are rumors that a grand jury investigation is about to start. Even if there aren't criminal investigations, the public disclosure of all this is very, very important, because the things that were done, the corrupt use of government power during the Biden administration, I think are unprecedented in our history. And we need to know who did this kind of thing. I've said this before. We need to know who did it, who engaged in this kind of abusive power, so that we can ensure that they never, ever are in the government again, never in a position where they can do this again, and also so that we can figure out, for example, with our intelligence agencies who were involved in this, how do they need to be reformed, who there needs to be fired, and what kind of rules need to be changed or put in place to make sure this kind of abusive use of government power doesn't happen again.
You know, when I'm looking at this long list of people who have been issued subpoenas from James Comer, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Merrick Garland, James Comey, Bill Barr, Alberto Gonzalez, Jeff Sessions, Bob Mueller, Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder, when these people are subpoenaed to come in and give a deposition, is that under oath? Is that a grand jury? What is the context of the information that they're going to be compelled to give there?
Well, assuming they show up, as opposed to claiming the Fifth Amendment and saying, I'm not going to testify at all. No, it's under oath. And if you're testifying before Congress and you lie, you're going to be prosecuted for perjury, just as if you were in a court of law and you lied. Now, if you lie to Congress, Congress can't prosecute you. They have to refer that over to the Justice Department. And the Justice Department is the folks who can prosecute you. But no, you risk perjury charges if you lie under oath to Congress.
If Representative Comer, who chairs the House Oversight Committee, sends a subpoena to Hillary Clinton and it has to do with the Epstein case, is that going to be a public hearing or a private hearing?
Well, I'm assuming they're going to do private, non-public depositions first to find out what they know or what they're willing to say. Whether that becomes public at some point, you know, the transcripts released or the video and audio that is released, that's going to be up to Chairman Comer.
And so it says in his post on X from August 5th that they are working to have these individuals appear for depositions through subpoenas. It's possible. This isn't necessarily going to just be a circus show where we see the committee sitting up there on the dais and the witness. And that all seems to be very politically charged. And I don't know if we always get a lot of information. I feel like if it's private, I guess I just trust the people in charge right now to ask the right questions to get the answers we need to have.
No, that's right. Because remember, the whole problem when witnesses appear before a hearing is that each member of the committee only has 5 minutes to ask a question and get an answer. That's not the case in a deposition. Depositions are usually actually conducted by the lawyers who work for the committee. And when somebody refuses to answer or gives a confusing answer, that lawyer can continue to cross-examine them, ask question after question after question, trying to get at the truth. And that's why it's important that they do these depositions first before there's any kind of public hearing.
And then last question to kind of wrap this all together here. If my understanding is that the Comer subpoenas are for the Epstein case, they're in regards to the Epstein
right.
case. Are there questions that could be asked, and if so answered, that could add a detail to the Russia investigation that could cross-pollinate information into another investigation that's actively going on at the same time?
Well, certainly with regard to Hillary Clinton, because as you know, there were disclosures just within the last, I think, 2 weeks of DNC emails that indicated that Hillary Clinton herself gave approval for the plan to create the Russia-Trump collusion hoax and to use it to distract attention from her email server problems and the fact that she was keeping classified information on her home email server that was apparently penetrated by Russian intelligence.
That's a full circle ending right there.
Yeah, isn't it?
Hans, this is the story that just keeps on giving. We're grateful to have you along for the ride and look forward to connecting to you again. 1 week goes past, it's like a year's worth of news headlines. So we're always great to get you back here as fast as we can.
Sure thing. All right.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Bye-bye. Gosh. To just leave a lot on the table there because I have to go to a break. I'm 5 minutes late. All right. Let us know what you think about the president and that census. Listening to Hans von Spakovsky there, how do you feel about it? Are you more compelled to support it? I have a feeling possibly, I don't know, maybe you guys are all in favor of a redone census. I think that the redoing of the census could solve a multitude of unfair problems that have been pushed upon Republican voters in this country. People who live in purple states and red states, you've been had. We all know it. I think the census might be the way to fix it, or at least a major way to fix it. We'll be right back. Took away.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Punk or emo?
Oh, man. It's not punk. It's got to be emo.
No, it is not.
It's a little bit lame.
Did you like punk or just because you think it's lame, it goes in the emo category?
Yes. That's how I
define it. You're like Backstreet Boys, emo.
Well, we can make a case.
Well, that's my point. That's not emo.
You think that's, it's just not punk. It's just not punk. I don't know if it's emo.
I think.
But it's definitely not punk.
I think what you think is punk, I think is alternative.
Say that again. What
I think that you, if we're talking about the same music,
yeah.
I think I would call a lot of it punk, and you would call it alternative.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or no, you would call it punk, and I would call it
late alternative.
Correct. And I'm calling late alternative punk, and then late punk emo.
Well, I agree with you about emo, though.
No,
I don't think. I don't think
we're
off.
We just disagreed. You just called my own worst enemy by lit emo.
Yeah, it's got emo elements. Just because I'm wanting to throw it into the sort of lame category.
The question is, for the people who are big lit fans, do they want to like key your car and attack you and tell you how big of a piece of crap you are, or do they want to cry? We'll take a poll.
Yeah.
And if crying wins, then it's emo.
I think that's fair.
I don't know that we are talking to the audience that will give us a scientific result.
That's a decent guitar riff. But
it's a great song.
It's, I don't know. It's just so, everything about it when
Pink
I
Floyd,
was in high school,
emo.
I'm like, there's a little bit of poser in this, isn't there?
Well, it's funny. My friend was in a band and two members of the band were really big Rage Against the Machine fans. My friend was a really big fan of Girls. and they would always want to play Rage Against the Machine fans. And he was like, "Hey, can't we just play something that would bring the ladies to the front?"
Was a big fan of girls.
Yes. Can we play something that would bring the ladies to the front?
That's
is what
a characteristic you use to describe one of your friends.
Yes.
Well, in a band, I would say that's in high, a, that's a fair
in high school. Yes.
Of some people getting in bands.
And this was the song he always wanted to play.
That makes sense.
My friend was a big fan of girls.
There are some guys.
I just want to know more about the rest of the friend group.
He learned to play guitar so he could meet girls.
Yeah.
Don't most people learn how to play guitar so they can meet girls?
I don't know. Nah. It's 50-50.
Yeah.
Some guys just love guitar.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they just love rocking.
When they're in their teens?
Yeah. Yeah. Some guys love rock. Now
I guess I'll just learn how to play this guitar really awesome. And I don't know. Maybe some girls will come around. I'll consider it.
Those are the ones that like the girls.
Yes. The other ones aren't concerned with the girls at all.
I don't speak this language. This is X's and Y's, and it's not the right time. I don't know. We're going to fight about this for a long time. You've got Wiggins America coming up that kind of fits a little bit in the same vein. We talk about Gen Z slang all the time. You're going to tell us about Gen X slang?
Gen X slang. Now, I'm borderline Gen X,
no,
but you
not.
Guys
you're
are
a
just under it. Now, but I graduated pre-2000.
That
which
doesn't
is,
have anything to do with it.
That's why it's called millennial.
No, 2000. It's not. No, it's not.
What is it? What's the term millennial mean?
It has to do with where you were at the turn of the millennium, but it doesn't have to do specifically with graduation. You were born in 82?
81.
81. You're a millennial.
I was always told that if you graduated pre-2000, that's what made you a millennial. 2000.
You were always told that?
Mm-hmm. Even in 2000, I remember that being a phrase that was just starting to become popular.
So you want to be Gen X?
I don't know. I kind of am. I was always told when I was in high school that I was part of Gen X, but...
The problem with the generations is that when it was in vogue to trash all over millennials, the people who were being complained about were not our age of millennial. The millennials, this is something Jack Posobiec has talked a lot about. I've definitely hitched to that wagon. About centennials is like the first half of millennials. We are divided in the millennial generation due to the installment of internet in your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And we did not. When did you have internet in your house first time?
Mid 90s.
Your age?
Oh, 14 or 15.
High school.
Mm-hmm.
Brad?
Yeah, I was like 16 or 17.
Maybe I remember having an AOL instant messenger, Go Eagle 43, in junior high. But a lot of I had friends in my class who had it, so I could talk to them through it. But it wasn't a means of communication that anyone relied on. It was just like, "Hi, we're talking through a computer."
Mm-hmm.
Hi, it wasn't a part of society. It wasn't something that it's kind of the way AI is right now. I feel like there could be a generational divide with Gen Zers, people who grew up without having you still sort of have to think for yourself. Up until now, but pretty soon AI is going to make it so we just have to be vegetables on the couch, not doing anything ever, if we so choose. But my children cannot understand at all what it would be like to not have the internet. Everything we do is one way or another connected to the internet. You make dinner, you bake a cookie, you look the recipe up on the internet. I still get out cookbooks, but that's because that's the way that I used. They were my grandma's cookbooks. But when it comes to those generational divides, when you have something so pivotal, so it affects in such a great magnitude how you do your daily life, of course there's going to be a before the internet people and an after the internet people. And we're actually, the people who are referred to as elder millennials or as we've said before here, centennials, we came of age without the internet as a functional part of how we live our lives, but we came into our professional lives ahead of the curve because we were accustomed to it. We hadn't established, you know, how do you do business without email? How do you do business without Zoom calls? How do you do business without the ability to, you know, put together a presentation on a computer and just zip it over instead of having to go print it out and walk it over and walk people through it? Like, there are people who in the workforce knew how to do things the old-fashioned way. Doesn't mean it was the wrong way, but there was definitely a new way of doing it. And then COVID is another thing that came in and forced everybody's hand. It was either learn or be passed by. learn how to do all this tech stuff. You can't say anymore like, oh, that's not how I do things. Specifically in radio, there was a lot of that. Like, oh, I don't do that. And that was like understood. You could be of a certain level of experience in a business like this. And I'm sure it's that way for pretty much all the other businesses. Teachers, I know that a lot of what teachers had to do and learn and were forced to integrate during COVID, you could kind of get away with being like, oh, that's not how I do things. But then COVID set in, it's like, nope, you have to, or you can't teach, you can't sell, you can't work. And people started to do it. It's just, I think people look at millennials like they're some sort of negative generation. I think we're a pretty powerful generation. I did see an article, I think it was in CNBC, I'd have to go back and find it, that said that millennials now are the largest generation in middle management at this point in time. But we're in our mid-40s.
It would make sense.
At the oldest, we're in our mid-40s. Most millennials are going to have mortgages if they're ever going to have a mortgage. They probably have one by now, close to it. And, you know, Ethan being Gen Z, he's 24, and he's living a grown-up life at 24. So, like, the millennial, the curse of the millennial, I will remind people all the time, that's just kids these days. And you just change the name of the kids these days. I'm sure that people had a lot to say about Gen Z. Boomers had a lot to say about Gen Z. There are a lot of movies made about that as well. I don't think it's such a bad thing.
And it'll be Gen Alpha soon. Like, very soon.
My kids.
We'll be saying, ah, Gen Alpha.
All right. Let's get Ethan in here and see if he understands Gen X slang.
Gen X slang. We're going to test everybody.
All right.
Wiggins. Oh, Wiggins.
All right. I have a bunch of slang. Now, we've done Gen Z slang before.
What is Gen X for Ethan get in here?
I think it's the bump music playing and then him being late anyway.
That's code?
Yeah, that's code. All right,
he's on Gen Z time right now.
He's really going to be tested here because the rest of us are very close to Gen X, but we might not be Gen X.
What are you guys?
Well, we just talked about this.
We're millennials.
Got it.
We are
old
for the purpose of this segment, millennials.
No. he is sort of a millennial who's kind of diabetic.
I'm kind of Gen X. I fall into this very strange middle category.
Right, well, you fall into a very strange category, but it doesn't have to do with your generation.
You don't belong, you don't fit in. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's the way I've always felt.
That checks out.
It's very Gen X of you.
Very much. All right, let's start with an easy one of Gen X slang. How about bodacious? What do you think? Does everybody know what this means? Is this an easy one?
Mm-hmm.
Bodacious? No? Really? The look on your face suggests
I feel
you
like
do
I've,
not.
These all
I
have to
like
go
I've,
to Ethan first.
I feel like I've heard it before, but bodacious. I don't know.
What if somebody was talking about a really hot chick? She would be a bodacious what?
Babe?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
So like she's really hot?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to struggle with this if you don't know bodacious.
Right. Can we?
Because these get harder.
Ethan, would you bodacious. Be willing to, after we're done with this, go around the office and just use some of this Gen Z slang, just try to use it in context and we can video and see what happens?
I'm sure that would go really
well.
That
would be
well.
Great.
Go splendid.
Can you do that?
Sure. Why not?
Since we all know what it is.
We'll just like integrate it into your work life in a casual way and see how it goes.
You want to define it, Brad?
Bodacious is just a positive thing.
Yeah,
it's
just
very
good.
It's
good. It's awesome. It's bodacious.
Bodacious. Hot.
That's a word. Is it like an actual word, though? Like in the dictionary?
Says the Gen Zer.
You know, that's a good question. I think so.
I'm doing that based off of knowing the slang that people create from my generation. Yeah. That's why I ask that.
That's a good question. We'll have to look that up. But before we do, Bogart.
Bogart? There's a guy named Xander Bogarts that plays for the San Diego Padres.
That's what it's from. That's amazing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow.
Good job.
Ethan.
Thank you.
Very good. Yep. It means to be a player for the Padres. It was just something we threw around back in the 90s.
Former number one prospect.
Do you have no idea what
Bogart
means?
No. I have absolutely no idea. I'm going to guess
I like that you attach it to a current baseball player and not the more famous Humphrey Bogart.
I don't even know who that, is.
Hey, more famous is relative.
True. Bogart.
Especially with Ethan.
Take a shot?
It's like hogging or keeping it to yourself.
Yep. Hoarding it, hogging it, and taking more than
it.
Your part.
I didn't know that.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Wow. All right.
It's because I'm so much younger than you.
These are just getting harder then. What about tubular?
I do know that
if you
one.
Were surfing a really good wave and you did a really wonderful job, at the end you might say, tubular.
Tubular. You know this one.
I know that one.
Okay,
yeah.
Good,
yeah.
Good, good, good. All right, what about gnarly?
Yes.
This one's tough.
Wait. What do you think that means?
Gnarly?
Yeah.
That was gnarly. That was rad. That was
okay.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say,
I feel like I say gnarly still sometimes.
That is a common definition. But the way that the Gen X Bible says that it is.
Gen X Bible.
Something like that. It says, described as something difficult, depressing, or impressive.
Yeah, but yeah. That, the other, the like, that test was gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
Would mean that that test was like kind of stupid, difficult. I don't think that that's the slang way to say it.
Yeah. It's,
I feel like
it's
slang
tough.
Way is.
It can go both ways. That's what's tough about gnarly.
I don't think, the slang is the way to say something's cool. I think the other way is what the word means.
Yeah.
Probably true. Probably true. But using it even in normal conversation as something outside of a mangled tree branch is still part of the
it's
slang.
It's a gnarled branch.
I hear the
no,
word.
No, but isn't slang like when you use a word in a
yeah.
different
yeah,
way?
But
I mean,
but even using it as common speech, I think, is slang. Gnarly was not a word that was used a lot before the 90s.
I hear the word gnarly, and I think of a guy riding a motorcycle with a black vest on. It says gnarly.
It's That's more of like of. A Jeep on the PCH, yep. And the doors are off, mm-hmm. And the wind is blowing, and the smell of sea salt is okay. In the air.
I don't know if I'm going to easily be able to change the image out of my mind, but I will try for you, Annie
You
Frey.
Will by the end of the show, Ethan.
I will try for you, Annie Frey.
Thank you.
If you say biker
Annie
one
Frey
more time
is my
in the
alter
show
ego.
Instead of Jeep, you're going to get it.
Ryan's just going to think about naked every time
talking,
I say biker.
When gnarly was a word that was being used in context, and you talk about bikers, I'm thinking of the bikers in Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Really, we all are.
I know you always are.
That's what all of America thinks of. How about grody?
What do you think?
The way I've always used grody is just a silly way to say gross.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got it. You got it. Good job.
Hey, that's three in a row.
Grody is the first five letters of one of my lifelong best friend's last name.
Oh, yeah?
Poor kid.
Do people still use this one? Hella.
Yeah.
Yeah, that came back, and it was super annoying.
Did it? I never liked that
Maybe
one.
In the last 10 years.
Hella. Yeah. So that one's
common. You know who I feel like brought hella back?
Yes.
I think Macklemore brought hella back.
Well, I was going to say Gwen Stefani.
Well, that's even earlier, so maybe.
God. Oh, man. Shots fired at...
Gwen
no
Stefani
doubt.
Was definitely Gen X.
No Doubt is actually kind of one of them. No Doubt.
Home Skillet.
I don't know why, but that invokes an image of a bad haircut in my head.
Isn't that just like homey? Home slice?
Mm. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, you
I'm
got
doing
it.
Pretty good
you
at
are
this.
Doing pretty good. This one's easy. We'll end on this one. Dweeb.
I literally, who did I call a dweeb yesterday?
So you know.
I called Chip Carey's 12-year-old son a dweeb the
oh my
other
gosh.
Yesterday.
Wow.
That's what I did.
Oh, no.
Name dropping.
No kidding. All right, keep it here. Larry Alex Taunton coming on the show. We're going to talk about conservatism, wokeism, and fascism. What is actually what? I love Larry Alex Taunton. Can't wait to have him on the show.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.